Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for listening. I'm coming at you right now from a small town in Japan. I don't even know the name of this town, but my wife Katie and I have been biking around Japan for the last couple of weeks. We've pretty much been going from dawn till dusk. The days are getting shorter, so we don't have a lot of time on our hands. But we've been making good progress with this bike trip. It's been going really well. In the next episode, we are going to give you some play-by-play details of what happened during our trip. There have been many adventures along the way. Stay tuned for that. But for now, I want to bring you my last of the three podcasts that I recorded back when I was in Beijing, China. And this one is with Teresa and Ross. Now, Teresa is a yoga instructor in Beijing, and she has her own yoga company. She also has a side project called Yoganda Bags, and this is where she and others teach widowed women in Uganda how to make these really cool handmade yoga bags. I'm going to put up a link to that project. I hope you get a second to check it out. The bags are really cool looking. And one final thing before we get into this podcast, I should note that we recorded this show in a juice bar in Beijing. Unfortunately, I don't have a nice quiet apartment anymore from which to record these podcasts. So there is a bit of background noise on this one. There are some people shouting. There's some grinding of some machinery in the background. Please bear with me, and thanks for understanding that I can't get you perfect sound quality every time. We're doing the best with the space that we have, and Beijing is quite a noisy place. All right, so without any further delay, let's get into my podcast with Teresa and Ross. So yoga started in India, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And Is it a really ancient thing?
Super old, yeah. Like the oldest. Like the Rig Vedas are the oldest texts really ever recorded. With Sanskrit, it's like the oldest written language.
All right.
So super old, and then the guy Krishnamacharya kind of came out of the woods, over 100 years ago, and started training his he started training people, and then it just kind of spread from there. And then, of course, like what we know as yoga today is very westernized. But there's lots of branches and lots of styles. But I think, like, really yoga is everything. That's why there's so many different styles of it. It's just like breathing, moving, thinking. So it's kind of everything.
Okay.
I mean, it's interesting just in terms of yoga, in terms of us, that's been, I think, the constant theme. In terms of our whole relationship and the travels and everything, in large part, yoga was at the core of it, even though I don't think that was the plan originally. Because we met in Beijing at a time when we were both looking to leave, but for different reasons.
Oh, okay.
For me personally, I've kind of been here for quite some time, not really sure what else was out there.
When did you first come to Beijing?
I was back in 99, so kind of grew up here in terms of, you know, the person you kind of turn out to be is, you know.
Yeah. So you were a young man in 99?
99, yeah, my early 20s, just graduated, traveling the world, and didn't even intend to come to China. China was an accident, but loved it, stayed, and my career kind of just started in China and went a few different directions. But at some point, you know, there was a point in 2010, I was fortunate enough to travel to Sydney quite a lot with work.
Okay.
At least two or three times a year, and I remember making a point to meet up with a good friend who'd lived here but moved back. And since moving back, he'd got married, he had little kids, he'd become a fireman. And I spent the weekend with him, and he had this little kind of house by the sea. It was blue skies, you know, back in Beijing, it's winter, it's cold, it's polluted.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell am I doing? And so that's where I really started thinking about what's my get out of China plan?
Yeah.
Is it work? Is it study? And in the end, it was Teresa.
Well, you're still here.
We are.
You're back.
That's a different story.
I mean, we should get there.
We left, but we made a conscious decision to come back, which is different.
Yeah. Okay.
I think 12 years in Beijing, it flew by.
Yeah.
It wasn't a conscious decision; it just happened.
Life has a way of doing
that.
3
became 7, became 12.
Yeah.
And so, why I say yoga is a key theme, I mean, before leaving, the conversations I was having with people, was having with my work, was what is it am I looking for? I really had something missing in terms of guiding me, in terms of what it is I wanted to do, what kind of person I wanted to be. And even when we left China, I still didn't know what that was, but I think in large part it was finding yoga. Has had a huge impact for me. Looking back, I didn't see it at the time, but over the last 5-6 years, it's become a big part of our lives and our conversation and stuff that we do, something we practice together. And that's been great, that's been magical. And I can see now what people were saying back in 2010, but I didn't fully appreciate or understand. I get it now.
With respect to yoga, you mean?
Yeah, and how it can help. I mean, and Teresa's been the kind of the guide and the teacher and in terms of that kind of leading the way.
Yeah. Teresa, when did you get into yoga?
My first class was my freshman year of college. So I just went with a friend to actually a hot yoga class. Afterwards, I felt so amazing. It was so hard. Like, hot yoga is really tough.
I have heard.
It's really hot. It's really hot. And for somebody that's never done yoga before, it was like quite a jolting experience, first experience. But I felt like really high afterwards. And it was like, you know, 7:30 a.m. You know, I'm walking home. The sun's coming up. It's like Boulder, Colorado. So it's like super beautiful.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, it felt so good.
Huh.
And it wasn't until it was a few years later where I really started practicing like all the time. Because after I don't have like a spiritual experience, but I basically like stopped drinking, stopped doing drugs, like everything. And that's when like I filled that gap with yoga.
Huh. And it was all because of yoga?
Yeah. One or the other. Like, it's kind of a mutual relationship. Like, the whole sobriety and yoga were like together.
Good team.
Yeah, yeah. They were a team. But have you heard of like hatha yoga before?
What is it, hatha?
Hatha.
No.
Hatha.
No, I don't know.
Okay, so it's like a type. It's like, well, hatha basically means sun and moon together.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, why when like Ross is saying about yoga being like a common theme in our whole relationship, is really yoga is about creating healthy balance, like a balance that's really healthy for you.
Hmm.
And so obviously in my own life, like I had a lot of problems when I was a kid, and so it was in like recovering from those problems with, you know, letting go of some of the things that were really unhealthy and like really harming me, so finding like healthy balance through yoga, and just like spiritual practice period. It doesn't need to be yoga necessarily, but meditating, like again, like what Ross was saying, like connecting to something maybe more important or like less superficial than, you know, like the rat race, like the American rat race.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's pretty brutal.
Like, there's more to life than that.
Yeah, there's way more to that.
Yeah.
And like for me, man, I thought like the whole point of life was like to party and look good. I mean, I was really jaded.
Really? You're from Colorado?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that a normal thing there?
Maybe not, but yeah. For my generation, like, you know,
probably,
17.
Probably not Boulder, but just, you know, the university.
Well,
kind of.
I grew up and it was like 17 magazines, you know, like these teen magazines where it was like, and I think that every culture deals with this, and like, you know, sitcoms and TV shows, and Boulder is a huge party scene, but even my high school, I mean, people were really like partying, and like we were given everything. Like, we were really privileged. So there was this, there was no, like, drive to, like, do something important or helpful for the planet. It was, like, all about, like, self-centered fulfillment. And so in some ways I feel really lucky that I hit a pretty, like, hard bottom. Like, it was when, like, all that stuff was going to be taken away as a result of my partying.
You were overdoing it, huh?
I was way overdoing it. It was like, okay, it's either, like, all or nothing for me.
Okay.
And I chose nothing.
Okay.
And then everything got really good. That's, like, when I moved to China and I, like, managed to graduate college and, like,
And sometimes it takes that, you know, like, I think about this sometimes with maybe live, like, as an analogy. A lot of Europeans get, like, 1 month off of work. And as an American, you might think, like, wow, you can take all of August off. That's awesome. Like, you can take a big vacation. I think if I had something like that, I might have just done that and been happy with it and never really taken a big leap and actually quit and done something longer, bigger. So it's almost like not having anything for vacation, like having almost no vacation at all was what propelled me to take a really long one. And I don't know, maybe it's something similar with what you're saying. Like, if you grew up in a not such an extreme individualistic society, then escaping that might be a little harder, actually.
Totally. But I don't see many, I mean, so many people from, like, are from my, like, you know, what do you call it, class, creed, whatever, are, like, are stuck in, like, a 9-to-5 you know, not even 9-to-5 like 9-to-9 in some cases, you know, 2 weeks of holiday, constantly paying bills. And it's like, God, I just have so much gratitude that, like, we're able to live. I mean, it's not always perfect, but I don't do that.
That's great. So how did you get out of it? Or, like, you tell me how, but did you first go to China? Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, I graduated from college and was like, I one of my friends, like, came into the coffee shop I worked at one morning and was like, yeah, I'm going to China. And, like, for some reason, that just, like, planted a seed in my head where it clicked that that was, like, I was a poli-sci major, and it was kind of clear that, like, the whole world, like, China was the next world superpower. At that, because, you know, again, American, it's like, we're so egocentric. It's like, you know, growing up in the 90s in America, it's like USA, you know, number one.
It's not anymore.
No comment. But, you know, like, I don't know, I was just like, oh yeah, China, I'm interested in that. I thought I'd go for a year and learn how to speak Chinese and try to take over, like, some big world corporation. And so at my graduation party, I just started telling people, oh, I'm gonna move to China. And then I did.
Did you just come here without a job or anything?
I got a job teaching English at Nankai University in Tianjin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a good school. And yeah, but I flew to Shanghai first, so that was my first really big international flight. It was like 12 hours, you know, the whole deal, and, like, landing, feeling like I'd been, like, abducted by aliens or something. It was so, like, and I miss that in a way, like, you know, those first experiences traveling where you're, like, you step off the plane and you're, like, hit by, like, these waves of smell that you've never had, or, like, because I don't really, unless we've, you know, maybe if we like, went to Morocco or something, but, like, I don't really feel like I get to experience that anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. Same here. I mean, Mexico was it for me when I was 15. For the first time seeing all the stuff, this noise. And the
I think for me it's Egypt.
Egypt?
The same kind of, like, whoa, I'm out of my depth, and it's so bright, and the noise, and just exciting and scary,
Yeah, for me it was never scary. It was just, like, exciting. What? Just, like, being on drugs. It's like, what? Being high. Oh my God, this is so awesome, and I never want this to go away.
Yeah.
Of course, those feelings fade over time.
Sadly. Used to it,
Yeah, it becomes more normal.
I think ours was, my first time was Mexico, too, but that was, like, 12, and that's, like, holiday vacation. It's different, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It's like the airport's kind of traumatizing, but then you get to the resort, and it's like, okay, it's not really.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't do the resort thing. I did a, this is
like
before.
Mexico.
Yeah, this is when I was 15, and there was no internet yet, and there was no, like, we weren't connected in the way we are today.
Yeah.
I had no way of even looking up what it was going to be like. No one I could talk to beforehand. It's not even that long ago that when you think about it, but so much has changed now. You can actually get a much better idea of what to expect nowadays. But at the time, I just was thrown into it. Mexico City, and lived with a family, and that was unbelievable.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's what got me in love with travel. I guess you guys
I think we're lucky that we have that. Yeah. That experience and that love of travel, and that's how we want to kind of shape our lives. You write about the U.S. and having 2 weeks of holiday, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's miserable for a lot of people. But then it's... I think a lot of people don't see any way out of it either. I feel bad, you know? Like, especially if you get into debt. Nowadays, college is so much money. Yeah. People have so much debt. Mm. Like, you can't even just get out of it.
No.
like with tuition debt, it doesn't go away. Even if you declare bankruptcy, it's still there.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it's like this burden.
Yeah.
So.
That's like our dad gave us that gift of like, he paid for our college.
Oh, okay.
For our university. Yeah. Which is like, it was only in retrospect where I realized like what a huge gift that was, you know?
Yeah.
He worked for the university, so it was like part of his
thing. It's like a legacy thing.
It was like part of his package, but
nice.
But still, like, wow, yeah.
It's a lucky thing.
So lucky.
I remember seeing protests in England a few years ago when they were gonna start charging money for university.
That's just it. I mean, my sister, who's a few years younger than I, and myself, we were the last ones to kind of squeak through without having to pay any tuition fees and.
Nothing.
And to get kind of student grants. I mean, we still took out some student loans, but we're talking small fry, you know, paid off in a few years. And
Yeah.
Because what they're saying is, you know, all of the universities are maxing out the amount that they can charge because they set a limit.
Okay.
But the actual quality of the education is not really going up. There's a lot of frustration there. Mm. I think it's going in the wrong direction. Education should be free.
Yeah, I mean, there's arguments to be made against that, but like, I think it's just undeniably out of control. And when you owe more money than you owe buying a house, getting out of college.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I guess the flip side of it that I'm talking about is like, I've met a fair amount of, especially Germans. They're like, I don't know what else to do. I'm just gonna go to college. I don't have to pay for it, so why not?
But at the end of it, they'll come out. Educated.
Hopefully they learn something.
Yeah, true.
Don't just party. I don't know.
Yeah.
But on that topic, you guys had both been in China for a while before you met, is that right?
Let's see, when we met at the end of 2010.
Uh-huh.
In October, so coming up to 7 years now.
I've been here 3.
She'd been here 3 at that point, and I'd been here, I guess, 11. Mm. So... Yeah.
Yeah, how did you meet?
So the apartment building that I lived in, I had an apartment, and across the hallway were 4 American girls who also had an apartment, and we decided to throw a big Halloween party. Hmm. And so I opened up my apartment and got my friends along, and they opened up their apartment and got their friends along. So it was a big kind of hall party.
Big house party.
Yeah.
I mean, how many do you think? 200 people?
So many people.
200?
Yeah, huge.
I mean, they had kegs and we had DJ. I mean, it was full on
party.
It was
epic.
Wow.
It was a really good party.
It was epic.
And we
met college. It was like an epic college party.
Yeah.
That's massive. Huh.
So that's how we met.
Yeah.
That night. Yeah.
And what were you dressed as?
I was dressed as a big bunny rabbit.
Huge bunny rabbit.
So a number of years ago, there was a TV show in the UK, and the skit was, one of the skits that he did, he would dress up in these elaborate kind of animal costumes and do weird and amazing things in public places just to gauge the reaction. And I just saw how crazy funny that was. And so I spent a good year or so in Beijing looking for somebody who could potentially help me make one.
Yeah.
And it was actually during a work meeting. The client had just organized a promotional event for one of their brands, and they had these big characters dressed up. And I kind of stopped the meeting, and like, time out, where did you get them made? And they put me in touch with the office in Beijing, and I went in with some designs, and sure enough, 2 weeks later, these big mascot-sized rabbits. Got two made.
Two?
Two of them.
Just
so,
in case one...
A boy and a girl. No, just because then you could have more fun with it. So my friends and I would go out over the weekend and we'd go to shopping malls and just be stupid and have fun and video it and pick up parents at the airport. But anyway, so I kind of get them out every Easter and every Halloween. I've tried to give them away. So when we left China in 2011, I gave them away to a friend.
Yeah.
And then when we came back in 2014, he was just about to leave and he kind of gave them back. Which is kind of great now because we've got young kids, so they love it. But yeah, so I was dressed as a rabbit, dehydrated, hot and sweaty.
Yeah. Kind of popped down. Can you see your face when you're wearing it?
You can, but it's such a big head that it kind of put it on.
Do your kids realize that it's nobody you? Can see, like, no, because it's like a mask. It's like a giant bunny mascot. You can't see in. They can see out, I guess, barely.
There's like a gauze there where you can see out.
I see.
Mm, and I was a sexy microphone on Halloween. So I took, basically, I had a football in my head, like a soccer ball, and I cut it in half and spray painted it silver, and I dressed in black, and I had like a button, you know, like an on and off switch, and a cord that I was like twirling around, and it was probably my best costume ever. It was really cute.
Yeah.
And I got lots of attention from the European guys because they really like football.
Uh-huh.
And so that's my tip for any girls who need a sexy Halloween costume to attract Europeans, is to put a football on your head. And
did any Brits give you some attention?
This one did.
Yeah.
It was like walked in the party and he came right to the door. And I remember. He took his head off and he was like, "You are lovely." He said something like that. And I was like, so I knew who he was because I was not like stalking him, but he played football against my ex. And I saw him at a game like a year before, and then I worked with a guy that played on Sexy FC, which is the football team he was on, and I just knew that I knew who he was.
All right. And then you...
And my friend had actually, the guy I worked with had been like trying to actually set me up with him.
But I didn't know any about that.
But he didn't know about it.
No.
So I said, I was like, "Oh, I know you, you know, you play on Sexy FC, blah, blah, blah." And he said, "I'm the most eligible bachelor in Beijing."
Wow, humble guy.
I can't recall any of that.
Yeah, he said
next
that.
Next day, I'm like, okay, I can't remember.
He blacked out. He was blacked out.
Had she not texted me the next day to see how I got on with the police, then because the police were called a few times during the day because of the noise.
No serious trouble. Or?
He was so drunk though. So Rona, we were leaving the party. The police were coming, so I went back up to tell him that the police were there.
Yeah.
And he was making out with a girl on the dance floor. And I was like, okay, and I left. And then the next day, I texted him to see if he was alive and okay with the police.
And we had coffee that afternoon.
So if you hadn't sent that text, history would be quite different.
Maybe, yeah.
No, I think so. Hmm. Although your name was in my phone.
What was it in as?
Your name, Teresa.
XM.
Come on, you had something else there.
I can't remember. All I know is I got a text and because that next morning, feeling very rough and kind of embarrassed because the IE was going to come around to clean up this trashed apartment. Like, I have to get out, so I went to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody who was feeling as dry and as rough as I was, I remember that game and played quite well. But then, I got this text from this lady during the game. And
This lady.
And we met up for coffee and, we dated for a while.
Because he looks like James Bond, right? So that's how I was, like, referred to him. Like, I was referring to him, to the guy that I worked with.
James Bond looking dude?
Yeah, that he was going to
set me
up with
James looking
Bond.
Guy?
Yeah.
I was going to say, you don't look like the last James Bond. Like, what was his name? Pierce Brosnan?
No.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I can see that though.
Mm-hmm.
Good choice.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So you guys really hit it off, and then you said you left pretty soon thereafter, though? Left Beijing?
Well, okay, so we met on Halloween, and then he bought me at a dating auction. I did like this dating auction for charity.
Okay.
And he came.
That was November, wasn't it?
Yeah, he came.
Oh.
And he.
It's okay. It's an adult-friendly podcast.
I know.
Well, I wasn't going to go to this auction. I friends at a house party, and I'll be at the house party. And I think somebody else mentioned at the party that there's a dating auction. I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I should go to that. And fortunately, I arrived maybe literally a couple of minutes before she was due to be
auctioned off.
And you were one of the last ones, because obviously you were the big catch of the night. So she hadn't seen me. I don't think you'd seen me at that whole night. Mm. So, yeah, it was a bit flash, but then I outbid some
Chinese guy
who desperately wanted to, you know,
take it off.
This auction idea sounds like some sort of illegal endeavor.
It's super sketchy, but no, it was fun. It was fun. It was fun.
All right.
I think he spent like 3,000 kwai or something.
No way.
Yeah, and that was like in 2010.
And the date itself
was super nuts.
So in return, you have to get a date and you get a particular place. And I think it was the old Chinese kind of communist
thing.
Red Lantern or something like that. And we didn't actually take that date, the date that we paid for nearly a year. And it was due to expire, and we better do it.
Okay, so he bought me at the date, and then it was his 35th birthday in December, so we met in October, auction November, December 4th was his birthday, and he invited me to go to Thailand with him, and I just met him like 5 weeks before.
Yeah.
So I was telling all my friends, I was like, this guy I just met, he's super cute, he's like, you know, la la la, he wants me to go to Thailand, should I go? And they were like, yes, go. So we went, and he flew me business class, and we were sitting before the plane took off, and I had this huge glass of water. I was super nervous.
Yeah.
And I spilled it all over his crotch.
No.
Before we even took off.
Yeah. Why'd you do that?
I don't know, it was an accident, but I just remember feeling super mortified.
Oh my God.
Because, like, that's, you know, I was like trying to be like, you know, like super good and like, I'm so perfect. You know how you do. Like,
yeah. Very suave.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute.
And then we were together forever.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So folks at home listening, you just got to remember this. Dump a glass of water all over someone's
crotch.
Yeah.
But it was a nice weekend. I mean, it was very short. I mean, we flew out Friday evening, so arrived into Bangkok at midnight, got a car to pick us up, drove for a few hours to a nice little beach resort, and then had the whole of Saturday, Sunday pretty much, and then we took the car back late Sunday evening and flew back to Beijing straight to work. Monday.
Oh, so it's just a short trip.
It was a really short trip.
For his birthday.
Oh. Yeah, why not?
Oh, okay.
So we did that. So that's kind of cool. And then, obviously, over Christmas, Teresa went home for a few weeks, and I went to a friend's wedding in New Zealand. And,
All right. Well, like, how did you guys end up leaving Beijing, though? I mean, for good.
I mean, that's the next trip we took. So, I mean, Teresa was already thinking about going to graduate school.
I had finished applying successfully to graduate school in Bologna, Italy.
Oh.
And for anybody that knows what Italy is like bureaucratically, it's like a massive pain in the ass. Like, you have to get like official, original, like notarized, transcribed copies of like your grandpa's birth certificates. I mean, it's like so ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I got in. And so I was getting ready to go, and Ross said that if I didn't go and I waited for him till the end of the year, that he would quit his job and we could travel the world for a year. And so I had this big decision to like leave and go to graduate school or stay and hang out with this
guy.
When
was that? That was around about...
That was like June. May, June.
May, June, because the big thing for me was in February. So in February, it was Chinese New Year, and we went to Bali. For a week, and had a great trip. We really had a great time, and then just as we were about to come back to Beijing, Teresa decided to stay on for an extra week because she didn't have to be back to school. And at the airport, I picked up a book that a friend had recommended, but I'd never got around to actually buying, called The 7-Hour Workweek.
4 hours.
Four hour work week.
Way better than 7 hours.
Yeah.
So only half as much.
So the book by Tim Ferriss.
Yeah.
And I think on the first leg of the flight, it was just to Singapore, it was like a 3-hour flight, I'd read the book. Okay. And I remember walking around Singapore Airport, I'd phoned my best friend Alex, and my parents saying, that's it, I'm done. Mm. I'm going to quit. And I'm going to travel. And, you know. So that was the big decision then. But then it was a case of, okay, when and how, and does she want to come with me?
Okay. So you put her on the spot then?
Not at that particular moment, but that's when the kind of seed was planted. Like, well, actually, there's another option. Hmm. You know? Because for a period there, we were thinking about whether or not I could, you know, whether we could do long distance, whether I could be in Bologna or Italy. Yeah. But yeah. But then we decided to just make a clean break in China and travel.
Hmm. Huh.
But so, Teresa, you dropped out then, or what? Or
I didn't go.
Wow.
And that July, I did my first big yoga teacher training in Bali, so I flew back to Bali.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for like 6 weeks doing yoga. So, yeah. I mean, it was fine. I was happy to do that too. And then I came back and taught for a semester, and then we left.
Huh.
Well, I mean, that's probably one of those kind of junctions where you make a decision, and that was partly
those
even on the yoga path. I mean, not going to graduate school.
It's a huge decision.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty easy. It was like, go to graduate school or travel around the world with James Bond. I mean,
yeah,
that's
right.
Really what it came down to. And it was kind of like, oh.
But interesting.
And I really liked him.
When we left, we didn't really have
a plan.
We didn't really have a plan. The plan was, let's go to Denver and then let's go down to Mexico for a period of time and then figure it out.
So no time frame, nothing like that. No.
We thought a year, but we didn't really know what we were going to do with that year. And yoga wasn't even on the agenda, was it?
Mm-mm.
The idea of then India. What we had was return tickets back to Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So we planned to come back in May, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it'd be a good time to come back and cycle. And so I think we planned that. But otherwise, it's been quite flexible, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was super random.
Yeah.
I don't think we can really remember, actually, like how planned or random it was. It just was what it was. But
yeah.
I do know there were a lot of things where it was like, you know, like we did the bike trip in China and then Europe. And it was when we were in Europe that we were thinking about yoga. And I remember talking to my friend Dallas and being like, oh, we're thinking about going to do yoga teacher training in Ibiza. Like we're going to, I can't say it like how they do, but
Ibiza.
You know, Ibiza. And he was like, and it was super expensive and whatever. And he was like, going to Spain to learn how to do yoga is like going to New York to learn how to cook French food.
Hmm.
You go to India. And he was like, super right. So we looked at trainings in India and then next time.
Okay.
So that's kind of how things happen. It'd be like,
well, things, and the reason we're looking at yoga and she wanted to do the yoga. And I was like, well, because now we had an interest in Mexico, I was trying to learn Spanish.
Okay.
So part of the time I'd spent in Mexico was going to Spanish lessons. So, well, let's do it in Spain. I can continue with the language. But then, yeah, India was so cheap.
It's super cheap.
You know, 3 months for the price of 1 month in Spain. And just something different. Neither of us had ever been there before. Mm. But then, you know, we undertook 3 months for yoga in India. So that was...
It's a lot.
That was a lot.
Oh. Sounds like a very famous travel book and movie.
we were in Italy, and then we decided to lose all the weight.
What's Julia Roberts doing next? Or I would do that.
And you were in Bali.
Bali.
Yeah.
Finding yourself.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah, that's what we were doing. Yeah.
Got any ashrams?
Yeah, we did.
Which part of India were you in?
Two. We did Kerala. So Varkala Beach in Kerala, which is like southern tropical, nice. I think it's the richest part of India.
Poorest.
Kerala, no.
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 I thought Kerala province was the poorest.
No.
Really?
Mm. Okay, Google it.
Google it.
I'm pretty sure.
Richest part of India, poorest
part of
India.
And then Rishikesh was in the northeast border, close to the Himalayas.
Yeah.
We were there for a month and a half too.
Yeah. So we had 4 or 5 weeks in the south with one yoga school,
uh-huh.
And then we had a 10-day break before we had to start at the next place in Rishikesh, and that's when we got engaged.
Oh right, I was looking at your pictures. So got engaged not at the Taj Mahal, but near it.
So
Agra
is about 2-hour drive outside of Delhi.
Right, yeah.
And so we went down there for a few days, and in order to go and see the Taj Mahal, the big recommendation is you want to be there super early in the morning. Mm. So the day before, like, let's do some of the sightseeing around the area, there's some forts, and on the drive, we were getting hungry, and the driver just suggested a kind of I wouldn't say it was a roadside cafe, although it was, a little bit nicer than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want you to think kind of...
A dabba?
Dabba, yeah.
It wasn't horrible.
So we were sat there on the grass and with table chairs and having food, and actually Teresa tells the story better than I do, but... Well, I mean, going back, I mean, what I'd say is, I knew for ages that Teresa was the one, I think, even before we left China.
Aww,
and it was during our trip back to Beijing to go cycling around the country that I bought, didn't buy the engagement ring, but I bought a mock-up of, you know, what I would like it to be. I went to, I think, Silk Market and paid 50 RMB for... Actually, I think I got two rings, two different styles, because I couldn't choose.
Okay.
And so I've been carrying these around with me for a long time, and even in Europe, we were about to meet up with our family in Italy for a week. And the week preceding that, building up to that, we were in Paris, and I was always looking to propose in Paris.
But I got attacked by bed bugs.
In Paris, yeah.
Oh,
Paris. We were in a nice hotel, and yeah. I was, like, eaten alive by bed bugs all over my neck. It was awful.
Yeah.
We were not having a romantic experience.
I was going to say, yeah, of all the travels, I mean, we generally...
We don't fight really.
But in Paris, we had a couple of big arguments, I think.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like, well, she's still the one. I still want to get engaged. But I think to ask her here just doesn't feel right. So I'll just hang back. Yeah. And then obviously we had 2 weeks in Italy. The first week was with her family. And then the second week, my family flew in. And that was the first time the two families met. And it was a kind of that awkward kind of like... So you guys,
his dad's an atheist, my mom's, yeah. And his dad's an atheist, and my mom's like a God freak, so we had lots of like, these really fun.
So that was fun, huh?
It was super fun, yeah.
That, I mean, it was a fun weekend.
That's awesome.
That's like the first thing you talk about?
Yeah, my mom, yeah.
Oh,
I think they were both trying to kind of push each other's buttons just to... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's like, no, absolutely no chance there's any guy. For sure.
Yeah, they're both kind of taking extreme positions, even though they're both not like that. But but no, that was a fun trip. So, you know, bringing them together, we had a nice big house in Tuscany and lots of day trips. But yeah, we weren't engaged at that point. And it was only after that that we kind of then traveled to India.
Yeah.
There was no Uganda then?
That was next year. That was the year after.
Oh. And what's this?
Oh, I just Googled about Bricala. It's the 9th wealthiest province.
Out of 10.
No, this is just the top 25 wealthiest.
All right.
Okay,
cool. Stand corrected. But anyway.
Have to be right.
I've been carrying these fake rings on me for a while.
Yeah.
And then there was a point in the conversation where I don't even know why you started singing.
No. The song came on.
The song came on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The song came on in the restaurant. Bianca's like, if you like, then you should put a ring on.
Oh.
If you like, it should. And I was like singing it. Kind of like Bradley. And
that song has probably led to millions of forced marriages.
Yeah, maybe it led to ours. But yeah, he took out the rings and he proposed. I was like, yay.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
He put the rings on the table.
Yeah.
I don't think you got down on the knee.
No, I don't think I got on the knee.
Did you ask her which one she wanted? Instead of like yes or no?
No, I think I gave her one and then I showed her the other one later. But the one that I got her was very similar to the final one that we got made.
Okay.
What was cool about the proposal is we were sitting next to a couple, I think they were Scandinavian, either Norwegian or Swedish, or do you know where they were from?
Delicious.
But they'd been married 40 years.
Oh wow. And
that was cool.
They saw you guys?
Yeah, they were like there they saw the whole thing.
Started crying or something?
Yeah, they were like...
Well, it's like you want to tell everybody, you know? It's like, hey, you just got engaged. Hey, random couple that married for a long time.
Yeah.
We just got engaged. And they were sweet and had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then I remember us kind of wanting to speak to our parents first before we kind of, you know, the big Facebook announcement is always a big deal. So, you know.
Oh, Facebook.
So we had to make sure that the parents were on board.
Yeah.
But what that meant was the next morning we'd already made plans to go to the Taj Mahal. And so we got there early and we were able to do all these kind of fun combo, like yoga pictures, but also engagement pictures.
Oh, okay.
So that was fun.
Oh, did you get like somebody to take pictures of you guys? Or just yourselves?
Just the guide. But we got some nice photos out of that, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it's Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
You gotta get
those. Oh, so we got there for sunrise.
Oh, really? That early? Okay, that's really early.
I think we had to leave. Yeah, we left in the dark.
Yeah.
It was super nice.
Hmm. Did you guys go to the park behind the Taj?
I don't know.
So your big tip, which is a great tip, is go early. I'd say, there's a park on the other side of the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the river right behind it, and then behind that is a big park. And if you go there, it's it costs you almost nothing to get in. And then you still get almost the same view. It's just from a little bit far. Yeah.
I think partly it's to do with the lighting and just the sunrise, because we're queuing up outside in the dark when we see the sunset.
Right. I mean, you should still definitely pay to go in, because you get to actually walk around
amazing,
and stuff.
Right? Yeah.
This park, you just get to see it from the other side of the river.
I think we went to a fort, didn't we?
The Red Fort.
Yeah.
Right, the guy who built the Taj. I'm forgetting the whole story, but his sons, I think, were fighting about inheritance.
Something.
And they threw him in prison in the Red Fort. And so from his final days alive, if he just leaned back in his bed and looked the right way, he could look out the window and see the Taj Mahal that he had built for his wife. Or was it his wife he built it for?
I can't remember.
It was this big love thing. And he couldn't actually go to it anymore because his own son's imprisoned him.
That's awful.
If I'm remembering it right.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's like a good
story. I mean, I think we'd go back.
Yeah, and remember there was like some highway that they didn't tell us that we could use, so we spent like 4 hours.
Yeah, it's just that kind of, anyway, had we read up a little bit more about, you know, traveling to and from places, you kind of learn the different scams, and the scam was generally, you know, here's a fee to get to Agra, and then they take the back roads to get there to save on the highway toll.
Oh, got it, okay.
So had we known that, you know, it'd be a shorter trip. But hey, you know, whatever.
They still took you, right?
It's all an experience, but everybody we came across kind of gave the impression, like, don't go out in Agra on your own.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's very unsafe. So it's like, all right. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I guess I wasn't there for very long, just like a day.
Yeah.
I went with a friend and we took a train.
Yeah. All the trains in India, man.
Oof, yeah.
They're cool.
The thing that sticks out with me is going through the slums outside of Delhi. Mm. So, just incredibly sad to go through, and then early in the morning, seeing all the young guys coming out of their slum homes, and they just walk up to the train tracks and take a big dump right on the tracks as our train was passing by.
I'm like, yeah,
there's a guy taking a shit. Oh, there's another guy taking a shit.
Like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Sad.
It's a different world, India.
Well, the one thing I liked about the time that we spent there, apart from that 10 days in the middle where we did a lot of kind of sightseeing and traveling around and hotel here, hotel there, was that we were lucky to spend 5 weeks in Bakala and then 6 weeks in Rishikesh. We were in one place.
Mm.
And so, you know, you gradually got to know the local shopkeeper, the guy who sold you eggs, and just start building up some relationships, you know, be smiling to people and getting a sense of at least the speed at which the town and community kind of works on. So
that's cool.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our traveling was, apart from, say, Europe, we spent large chunks of time in
different
places.
Where else did you go?
In Mexico, we spent the most, in total, over the 200 years.
Okay.
So eight months, maybe 7 months.
Oh, that's a long time.
You know, 3 months and 2 months. And then
my parents have a place there.
In which part?
In Puerto Vallarta.
Okay.
And I actually, they bought an apartment. And so when I was 18, I graduated high school early and I moved there.
Oh.
And I was at Tequila Yara. Do you know what Tequila Yara is?
Oh, like someone who makes tequila?
They're the girls at nightclubs that have the tequila bottles and the whistle.
Like
the shot glasses
in the belt. Okay. See, I don't even know this part of Mexico. Yeah,
it's,
all right.
It's fun.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then it didn't end well. But the apartment that I'd rented while I was living there, the cleaning lady had actually rented it to me. And so one day, the door got, you know, there were these big guys banging on the door because I was like, they didn't know who I was. Like, the cleaning lady had rented the apartment to me without the owner knowing. So I got into really big trouble, and then my parents came down and ended up buying the apartment from the owner.
Oh, wow.
It sounds like we're really spoiled, actually, in that story. Yeah. It's not
they didn't buy it to kind of resolve that.
Yeah, no,
issue.
They didn't. They didn't.
Well, she slept in your apartment for 2 weeks. Well, we'll buy it.
Yeah, we'll just take the whole thing.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. But we've ended up being in that building now for because now we have like a small place right next to it. But Puerto Verde is amazing. It's seriously like, I think it's like a paradise. It's a bay. Mm. So, you know, you can see kind of the round body of water with the two sides. It's super tropical. The pelicans are like pterodactyls. I mean, they're huge birds that fly in packs along the coast in bees. So they're always just flying up and down the coast. And, you know, pelicans are beautiful.
There's just a lot going on.
There's whales jumping in the bay constantly. They come there January, February to have their babies.
Okay.
So you can like see them jumping around, like these huge whales.
The orcas or?
The great humpback whales. Huge whales. And then dolphins, and then the turtles are there laying their babies in the beach. I mean, it's just like, you go from Beijing in December to Mexico to Puerto Vallarta, and you're just like, what the hell? It's like so traumatic. Yeah. And the ocean, like, you know, the moon and the sun, they go like directly into the middle of the bay.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when you're laying in bed at night, when you're laying in bed, like, you can watch the moon, like, sink down. It's whales, you're just like, get out of here.
It's beautiful. And especially, right, you know, after Beijing, where that time of year is kind of very gray, it's like, please turn down the color and the contrast. You go to Mexico, and it's like, wow.
Mariachis and tacos and whales, and you're just like,
and you came back here.
Yeah.
Well, but she's been good. I mean, last year you spent, 6 weeks in Mexico?
Yeah, we go every year. So
ultimately that'll be the plan this year.
Because you can't live there. Like, I would go bananas bored living there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a small town or what?
Compared to Beijing, absolutely. I mean, it's small. It's definitely a go-to place for tourists. So that keeps it relatively safe. It means there's great restaurants, lots of fun activities.
Yeah.
But it's a service industry, service town, so there's not a huge amount you could do there.
It's a slow life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's, like, that's where I'd like to retire if I'm so lucky to, like, grow old and retire. But, like, in here, there's just so much happening. Like, we missed Beijing. We really did.
Yeah. Well, there's never a dull moment here.
Mm-mm.
And that's why coming back was such a... I wouldn't say an easy decision, but it felt right to come back. Uh-huh. Like, unfinished business, understanding there's a lot more opportunity here. I think both of us had a better sense of what it is we wanted to do. And having kids was part of that. And just from living here and having friends who've got kids, it's, pollution and traffic aside, it's an easy place to have kids.
Sure, okay.
And so...
Your kids were born here?
We flew back to the U.S. to have Kai, but Mia, she was born here.
Oh, wow.
So. But Kai's like, he speaks like his little Chinese, is so cute, it's like the biggest gift ever, I think, to give your kids, right?
To have that other language?
Yeah, and Chinese.
And the experience as well, I mean,
right.
His kindergarten, it's obviously full of Chinese kids, but also other nationalities, and where English isn't the first language, it's cute. And I think, you know, if we continue to live here, we'll still have those kind of opportunities.
It's really cool, yeah, that different perspective you'd get growing up in that environment. Totally different from what I had.
Yeah.
I
mean,
for sure.
Yeah, totally.
And now that we've had the second kid and, you know, we can just kind of get back into a bit of a routine. And that routine, I think, will involve us leaving for periods of time over winter and enjoying places like Mexico and then try and get the best of...
Thailand.
Best of both worlds, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and where do you go during the summer? Do you stay here?
This year we've been lucky to go back to Denver and the UK. So we took two trips.
Oh, wow.
So you've got a sense of family. But generally, what have we done during the summer?
UK or Denver, I think.
Yeah, UK or Denver.
Like Europe or US.
Because that's where Beijing is just like, ugh, it's too hot and polluted.
Nobody's here.
Yeah.
And this year we left a little late. I think we were here all of July. And we left pretty much August and September.
Yeah.
We got back like mid-September. So that's why I think it like feels so fast where it's like, oh my God.
We're back and it's winter.
It's like November is like right around the corner. So it just feels like this whole season like disappeared.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't recommend that again. Like leave in July. Just go in July.
Well, Katie and I were up in Mongolia a couple weeks ago, and it was winter.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming back here. It's like, oh, it's actually above freezing here.
Yeah.
You can get by with just a light jacket now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mongolia, cool.
What was it? What day? It's Thursday. 6 days ago, we left Mongolia. Or no, 7 days ago. Exactly a week ago.
No kidding.
It was -8 when we walked out of the town. -8 Celsius.
Ulaanbaatar, yeah?
Yeah, Ulaanbaatar, yeah.
You took the train back, or you flew in, or
train? It took, how long did it take? Maybe 28 hours or something.
Oh wow! Right.
Not too terrible, really.
Do they still have that point where they have to change over the tracks?
Yeah, because the Chinese train tracks are narrower than Mongolia and most of the world.
Right. Okay.
I think Europe and Russia and Mongolia, that they're all the standard gauge. China's, for whatever reason, are narrower, and that's a good thing to remind me of, because I wanted to look up a YouTube video of how the hell this happens.
Because
I saw some kind of contraption coming up next to the train, and we were stopped there for a couple hours, but I didn't actually get a picture in my head of what they were doing.
Pick you up.
But you don't get out of your car. They just, you go back and forth a couple times.
Yeah.
And then you're on the narrow tracks, and they call it changing the bogies, but I don't know really what that means.
That's crazy.
Yeah, do they lift I didn't have that sensation of the car being lifted. So I wonder what it is. I'll find a video of it.
Yeah. Cool.
But that's a large part of the trip, is just doing that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's also possible to take trains in both countries, like go from Mongolia, take the local train to the border, take a taxi across, and then jump on another train once you get to China.
Gotcha.
But I don't know, we just wanted to go straight through. It's easier. And I had this, I don't know, this romantic notion of traveling from Finland all the way to Beijing by train. So that's what we've done.
That's amazing.
Oh, it's been a great trip so far.
Wow.
And continue it from here. So this trip, what ended up being, 2.5 years that you guys traveled together?
Yeah. So 1 year quickly turned into 2.5.
Wow.
Well, two and a bit, but the last part was our wedding. So.
Also, I mean, we finished 3 months in India and then came back to Denver and Mexico for Christmas and starting off the new year in Mexico. Then what did we do? And then we went straight to Uganda, didn't we? So Teresa's got family who living and working there.
Oh, okay.
I have three little sisters, and two of them have been working and living there since 2008. So they've been there almost 9 years now.
Oh, wow.
So we went down the first time. I went down the first time in 2007, the summer of 2008, yeah. August, to try to get them to leave.
Okay.
But they didn't.
And so then you got married and then went to Uganda, or
no?
This was before.
So we were back in Mexico at the beginning of 2013, I guess.
We left the end of 2011.
India. Yeah.
Okay, blah blah blah, and then I don't know.
And then we planned the wedding for a year on from when we were there. We went to the local cathedral and checked the dates, and paid the money, and booked it.
In Mexico.
In
Mexico.
So we actually married in Mexico in Puerto Vallarta in the cathedral there.
It was so beautiful.
Oh, wow.
And I think in terms of going to Uganda, I mean, it was kind of, after being in India where we spent very little money for quite a long time, and then we had this opportunity to kind of go to Uganda to spend time at, the sister's NGO.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good opportunity to kind of spend another 3 months not going to break the bank. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's why we did that. And her sister and fiance at that time decided, hey, we'll get married whilst you're here.
Oh, wow.
So,
threw together a Ugandan wedding.
So they one-upped you guys.
Yeah, they totally did.
They totally did.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I ordered these zebra dresses from a Halloween costume website, so all the bridesmaids wore like these zebra dresses. It was super cute.
Huh.
But they didn't look like zebra. Yeah.
Just like black and white, you mean?
Like right. Zebra. Yeah. Like, so the theme, you know how like weddings have like colors? Their wedding colors were zebra and coral.
Zebra's a color now.
It was super cute.
All right, we're looking at the photo album.
2013, yeah. Nearly
you guys have this cool project of doing a photo album each year.
Yeah, it's Teresa's idea, and I think it's one of these that we don't want to give up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in Uganda over the 3 months, you know, not only did her sister and fiance get married, take two of the zebra dresses, we also managed to kind of fit in a safari, and it was great. Her dad flew out, and...
These are really cool dresses. They're not what I pictured at all. When you said zebra, it's more like...
Aren't they cute?
Yeah, it's like a swirly pattern. It's almost like a thumbprint.
Yeah.
But zebra. It looks great. Yeah, it doesn't look like...
No, it really worked.
Yeah, I thought it would be a real zebra.
See, that's a real zebra.
And now we were looking at an actual zebra.
Yeah, so it was fun. Like, the whole...
And then Teresa, there's a little church on the school grounds.
Oh, okay.
So I made that mosaic.
She made it.
You made that?
Yeah. Oh, it took me 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So I took like tiles from the floor, and it's huge. This is like...
I mean, you can see how big it
probably,
is.
Probably, it's like twice as big as this wall.
Yeah, probably what, 10 feet tall? 12 feet tall?
Yeah, exactly.
20 feet wide? Yeah. Wow. Huh, and this is broken tiles that you made it out of?
So I cut tiles, and then I made, like, the whole concept was I would put them on screens. So I would glue the tiles to screens that were, like, porous so that cement would go through the screens. And so each screen was, like, a meter by a meter.
Yeah.
And once they were glued and dried, then you take the screen, you take the frame off of it, put cement on the wall, then press the screen into the wall. And then grout it.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's amazing because it's still there. And
it's still colorful,
you know, it's where...
Sure.
Ever was. Yeah, so that was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. So, like, that's a screen.
Okay. And is this, like, the capital of Uganda?
This is in Iganga, so it's about 2 hours north... 2 hours?
No, well, depending on traffic.
2 to 4 hours north of Kampala, which is the capital.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, this, like... So my sisters have this NGO that started, it's like a really long story, but it's a really good one.
Oh.
They went down as a university project to like volunteer at microfinance project.
Sure, yeah.
And it got shut down. They were volunteering at an orphanage called Maranatha, and while they were volunteering there, it got shut down. Hmm. So all of the kids were like kicked out onto the street.
What, the government shut it down?
Or? Yeah, because of corruption. But it was like so bizarre because they're like, oh, we're shutting the orphanage, but like now the kids are on the street.
Yeah.
So my sisters like rented a warehouse and put all the kids in the warehouse. And they've been there now since then. So it started as this like children's home, and now it's this huge, it's a community development. So they just built a hospital. They have like these huge secondary school and primary school. 1,000 students at the school, like over 100 employees.
A cafe.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And your sister still is there?
She's she's a co-founder. So her and her husband, yeah.
Oh.
Like the U.S. ambassador was there, or the ambassador's wife was just there. It's like it's a huge deal because it's self-sustainable, which means they could exist exactly as they are now without any more foreign donations because they generate enough income.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Is this where the bags comes from?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, so I make these bags called the Uganda bags, which are yoga plus Uganda equals the Uganda bag. And it's like this tiny project, which is a part of their huge Musana
community development projects, but the Bags act as like an ambassador. So we had a social worker find these vulnerable women in the community who like really needed work and had some sewing skills, and we put on a training for them to use electric machines. And so they make these bags and they sign their name in the bag. Their picture is on the tag, so it's like a very personal experience for people that buy the bags. And all of the money that we make goes back into trainings. So it's just a way of like spreading the message with like a tangible good.
Yeah.
You know.
Hmm. And you buy these online, or do you have a store? Or?
I have a WeChat store.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I can get the link to it
later.
Yeah,
totally, totally, totally.
Yeah, I can put it up on my show notes.
Oh, that'd be cool, yeah. Yeah, they're cool. People like them.
But there's no website for it?
Oh, Trace has no website.
So my website is Tao Zi Tree Yoga, which is just like my yoga company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and I see it. Okay, so here's a, I see a
picture
of a bag.
And this is a bag. So this is like the hand bag version. So there's the big one, which is big enough for a yoga mat. And then this is like the little, like, going out bag.
Okay.
Which is smaller.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an awesome project.
Yeah, it's super good.
Huh. And do you keep going back there to like do,
yes.
Visit or?
Yeah, so we'll go again next October. Hmm. And actually all of your listeners are welcome to come, because so last year we took the trip, it was called the Uganda trip. Hmm. I took some of my students and we did 4 days at Musana doing social work. Hmm. Kind of, it's like volunteerism, you know, you're like.
Yeah.
And then we did a safari and we did 2 nights at a waterfall.
Yeah.
So we'll do the same trip again next year.
Oh, wow. And you're like a guide of sorts? Or
yeah, yeah. I just host the trip. So I help, I organize the whole thing. And like we get to go stay at my sister's NGO at Musana, which is like, it's just like the best experience ever. In fact, you guys should go. I think you'd both really like it.
Wow. I haven't thought about that.
No, I'm serious. It's like mind-blowing.
When is it?
Well, we're going in October, but you could go anytime.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like,
yeah.
You know, you can just go and you can help my sister start her podcast.
Oh, wow.
She really wants to do. Because what's so amazing about Musana is, you know, there's so many organizations that are, like, all about, like, fundraising and, you know, raising money. And then, like, not that this always happens, but so often it just gets, like, squandered or misused or... there's no like evidence that it's actually making an impact on the community. And this is like, it's like super, it's like transformed the whole community.
Yeah.
It's 100% self-sustainable. It just like, it's really opening, a lot of possibility in the country. Like it's getting a lot of attention.
Because it seems to be the right model.
Because it's the right model.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. They don't even need donations anymore.
Right, right. But they take donations because she wants to replicate the model in other communities. So because...
Well, it's a short-term thing then. It's not like you're just donating for something forever, right? Like, replicate it and then eventually they become self-sustaining.
Yes, exactly. Then... You're donating to something that's going to like self-grow.
Yeah.
Is the idea.
Instead of needing money every year for a million costs.
Like right.
Let's get it
ad nauseum.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the problem with that system is once the white folks leave and the funding dries up, then it
comes down.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the way that they've done it.
It's really
good. Ugandans run by Ugandans. You know, it's really good.
I'd like to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome to go, and everybody's welcome to go.
All right. I've never been to Africa, actually. It's the only kind of continent I haven't been to.
Yet, you're going to come with us next year. You can come next year.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it. We'll see how that lines up. God, we got so many plans. The world is so huge.
Really?
We've just got so many places we want to go.
Absolutely, yeah.
I feel like it's shrinking.
Well, I mean, we're lucky that we can travel anywhere and, are adventurous.
I find that wherever I go, I learn more about that area. Mm. And it's almost, what's the word, fractal? It's almost like, right now I can only just picture Africa, and maybe I can, if you show me a map of Africa, I could probably only name like 5 countries, honestly. Mm. But if you show me a map of South America, I can name like every country, every city, everything, and like zoom way in, yeah, yeah. And the deeper I go, the more I learn that it goes deeper still.
Yeah, totally.
Just, you can never get to the bottom.
It's like this street corner to this little, like it just gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah, we could just focus on this neighborhood for months at a time.
Yeah,
just one neighborhood in Beijing, mm-hmm. you know?
It's crazy that you're actually here today. Like, we live right behind the... We live right here.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that's a popular area, I guess, for foreigners.
Yeah. But just in terms of traveling, I mean, I always find it funny when... It's only after you've been to a place that you realize that the impression you had beforehand is so kind of misconstrued that, you know, movies and books and always throw it in a very strange light or a different light. If I go back to movies and books that I read or watched before I came to China, the books are kind of influence your, you know, your perspective. Like, whoa, that's just completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the attractions about staying here was just, okay, it's not what I thought it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
But what I mean by that is, like, you've just come from Russia, and Russia is one of the places I haven't been to.
Uh-huh.
And the impression I have is quite a scary one from a traveling point of view.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm sure if I went there...
The whole continent. Yeah. No, it's totally fair. You think that way because you haven't been there.
Yeah.
And, like, I was scared of going to Russia, too. Totally honest. Then I went through it, I'm like... This is completely different than what I thought it would be, just what you're saying. And even if I tell you that, you can't know that until you go.
No, true.
You can't possibly be completely prepared for anywhere. I mean, you could be more prepared for some places.
I guess the key thing is just go with an open mind and
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from the moment I got into Russia, the agent or whatever just stamped me in and said, hey, like, where's your stuff? And I said, yeah, that's mine. She said, okay.
Cool.
Welcome to Russia. That's it. You know, I'm like, oh.
Welcome to Russia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And,
amazing.
And then a drunken pirate showed us where our hostel was. And
no.
Yeah. Well, a guy pretending to be a drunken pirate trying to get people to come to his restaurant or something.
Oh, God.
But...
That's fun.
He's dressed like Jack Sparrow. And, I'm like, oh, well, this is Russia. All right. Not what I pictured, but
yeah,
that was my experience.
That's cool. That's a cool trip.
Yeah, it was great. And it's easy to do from here, too. You know, just hop on a train.
Yeah. We had a friend, what, last year?
Dominic, yeah?
No, it wasn't Dominic.
Oh, Alex.
Alex. Yeah. Decided to leave China to go back to the UK, but instead of flying back, shipping all of this stuff, overseas, he just did it all on the train.
Yeah, it's totally possible. Did he just go straight through?
I think so. I think he.
The last part was by plane, I think.
Yeah, I think he
like had a friend's plane or something.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but he was able to take so much stuff with him. Mm-hmm.
But there are direct trains from Beijing to Moscow. Like every week, there's one or two.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I'd enjoy that.
With the babies?
You could go one way and then fly back again. With the babies, maybe in a few years.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you could really go mad, though, unless it begins to rain in.
Well, with two kids, second class in Russia is basically the same as soft sleeper in China.
Right, okay.
So you get your own room, you got four beds, you got four people.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a long journey. It's a good week, though, isn't it?
Oh, like a week, yeah. I mean, it's a long time for kids to sit on a train, now that I think about it.
I think you'd wait until it's just us and books older.
Well, I mean, we stayed in Russia for a whole month and then, like,
you
3 weeks
in... the train, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, 3 weeks in Mongolia. If you don't get off the train, if you just buy the straight-through ticket, the train will stop in the bigger cities for, like, 45 minutes to an hour. And they'll have a clock, like, here's what time it is now, here's what time we're leaving.
Yeah.
So you do have a little bit of time to get off and walk around.
But with your ticket, you were getting on and off the train.
Yeah, we just bought individual tickets to different cities.
Oh.
Yeah, and Russia now has a good website that's in English for buying tickets.
All right.
So it's pretty easy to see it all. Get a better idea of what it's like.
Yeah, that's good. That's nice.
You can use a foreign credit card.
That's
good. Yeah, it's not so bad. The one thing that happened though that screwed us up at first, at least, is every single train time in Russia is Moscow time.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't know this. Well, we kind of had heard it, but I didn't realize even buying the tickets online, the timetables that you see are all Moscow. So once you're out this far from Moscow, you're like 6 hours ahead. I think it's six, something like that. 6 hours ahead of Moscow.
Yeah.
And so I thought I was buying a ticket for like 9 a.m. and I was buying a ticket for 3 in the afternoon.
That's great.
Yeah.
<that's...
laughs>
And at one point we forgot, we did the correction backwards. So we got to, instead of getting to the train station 2 hour or like an hour early, we got there like 5 hours early. Because we went two more hours in the wrong direction versus the right direction. Like, oh no. And so you just got to be careful with your times.
So what did you do at the train station for 5 hours?
I was super sick. I had this big chest infection. No, I had I got sick twice. I had just regular food sickness. And I was really weak and just didn't want to move. So I just sat there for like 5 hours.
Oh God.
Yeah, it kind of sucked. So don't do that.
No. Avoid that.
Been there.
Yeah, I mean, in all of the like the list of travel blunders, that one's pretty small, actually.
But getting sick, no man.
Sick on the road sucks. Yeah. Hmm. But anyway, I mean, go to Russia. I feel it's very important to go to places that you're afraid of, as long as you're within reason. You know.
So, what are you heading to next? You'd say you mentioned before Japan.
Japan. I'm not afraid of Japan.
And then after Japan.
Back to China for a bit, and we'll get down to Xiamen. Somehow we might bike it, we might take a train, I'm not quite sure.
Oh, Xiamen to Xiamen could be fun.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah. Cool. Neither of us has been to that part of China, so that might be cool. And then we'll go to Taiwan for a bit. And then from there, we need to get to the Philippines. So we want to sell the bikes, get rid of them in Taiwan.
Yeah.
And maybe catch a boat to the Philippines, maybe just have to fly. I don't know, we haven't worked that out yet.
That's fine.
Maybe you have to fly.
I don't know either. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of flying. I'm not that I'm afraid of it or anything, it's just like you just miss everything.
It's boring.
Yeah, it's like it's not travel to me.
Sorry
That's okay. And so hopefully I'll let you guys know if this works out, but we're leaving our backpacks here is the plan. And we'll just put them in a duffel bag. Mm. And then one of our Filipino friends will fly home for Christmas. And then they'll take the duffel.
All right.
Hopefully we'll get that to work out.
Yeah.
And then we'll meet them in the Philippines, pick up our duffel bags, or our backpacks, and then be on our way without our bikes.
Oh, well then.
So.
That's a great idea.
If the logistics all work, it'll be a great idea. There's a lot that could go wrong. But we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll work out somehow.
And where's the end game?
Okay. Maybe India, maybe Nepal. I've spent some time in India, but I really want to, well, ideally I'd love to go just for a whole year just in India, but that's not going to happen this time, but a few months anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then after that, anywhere in terms of like settling down? Or...
Well, that's the big question right now. Katie's putting together a resume. She'll look for jobs. Who knows? Could be back at home for a while. Could be abroad.
Where's home?
Wisconsin.
Mm.
Or we could. Who knows? Could travel longer. I don't know. We don't really have this planned out yet. But that's okay. It's like, you know, 9 months from now. So whatever.
That's true.
And what about you guys? End games in Beijing?
Or in China at least for the next few years.
We don't know what we're doing. We might be leaving at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I mean, what's it like? You're from different continents. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult, like, meeting with family and working all that out?
It's going to get increasingly difficult, I mean.
My sister lives in New Zealand. Mine lives in Uganda. My parents are in the U.S. His parents are in the U.K.
So you're all over.
And everybody's getting married and having kids, so it's all becoming a little bit harder.
Mm.
So, you know, I look at my sister. She's just had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Sister-in-law's just had a baby, you know.
Wow.
Your sister, Andrea's second one's on the way.
Mm.
And just as you have kids, you know, you have other family ties and just kind of planning in advance saying, look, a year from now, it's all try and be here.
Fly them all out to Beijing?
Yeah, right time of year, absolutely. My parents, where they go to see my sister in New Zealand, flying through Beijing's always an option. It's easier, it doesn't cost anything more, breaks up the trip.
Oh yeah, they can stay for, what, 72 hours?
Or they get the visas. And they
or just get a visa.
Yeah. They just do that.
Mm. We don't have jobs, really. I mean, I have my job, but he doesn't have his job here. So he's interviewing.
We're in the process of, you know, me looking at other options.
Yeah, okay.
And hopefully something will come in. If it doesn't, then we'll explore other opportunities, I guess. Which could mean either go to the UK or the US. And,
or Mexico.
Or Mexico. So we don't know.
You guys are so all over the place.
Yeah.
I say that in a really good way. That's a compliment.
It's not ideal right now, but it's kind of like one of these forced changes. Like when the world's kind of, when like the powers that be or whatever kind of force your hand.
Yeah.
And you don't have a choice. You just kind of have to roll with it, right?
Hmm.
So.
I think we have to get going on that virtual reality. That's it. Like, mm-hmm. you step into a room and then we're like, all your family are just sitting around this table chatting. And it's just like they're there. And it won't matter where you are.
Is that going to happen?
I think so, yeah. I think we'll have holograms not like a couple decades from now. I think eventually, this is way out there. I mean, this is just my weird brain, but I think eventually people will just stop traveling altogether, which is really sad for me. But you'll be able to just go anywhere you want, anytime, virtually. And it'll be like exactly like reality.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to go.
Well,
who knows though?
Then how can you interact with your environment?
They'll all be online. It'll all be.
It's like that scene out of what's the cartoon? Wall-E.
I haven't seen it. I've heard it's really good.
Intergalactic travel, where all of the passengers on the spaceship don't need to move, don't need to get up. They just sit in their chairs.
But they're all really fat.
And just eat and drink and get fatter and fatter and bigger, and their bones kind of decay. So that's just everything taken care of for them.
Oh, that's going to be what happens.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll be like that Star Trek episode where the first original Star Trek, where the life forms get so advanced that they become just brains, and there's no bodies. And they just, all they do all day is make bets. And they bet on people fighting to the death.
Great.
And they bet credits. Like, I bet you 4 credits that Captain Kirk wins. I bet 6 credits the lizard's going to win.
Great.
That'd be kind of cool.
This world, man. I read that the bugs are dying now, too.
The bugs.
All the bugs?
All the flying bugs, I think that's where headline for that as well.
Oh, man. All the bees were dying a couple years ago.
Thanks, Guardian.
Yeah.
We have our babies.
Yeah, I guess we should end on that high note.
Yeah.
All right, folks, all the bugs are dying.
All the bugs are dying.
And we had a great discussion. So thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks,
yeah, I really appreciate you doing this. Everybody should go to the Yoganda project.
Yeah, cow to tree yoga.
Buy the bags, head up to Uganda and do some yoga.
Woo!
All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks again.
Special thanks to Teresa and Ross for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. For more information about the projects that I'm involved with and those Uganda bags, you can always go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you next week.